There is a new magazine on the stands that puts its lens on us, we who live in the Midwest and lower Midwest. Publishers are tired of our being called flyover country. It aims to put this part of the country on the map. The magazine is called The New Territory, a quarterly publication which debuted in April. As I've indicated, it has a special agenda. And with me in studio to talk about The New Territory are Tina Casagrande, its publisher, and writer Michaela Thornton. Ladies, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Don.
Congratulations on the magazine. It is very slick. I'm very impressed with what I've seen. Volume 1, Edition 1.
Yes, the pilot issue.
Yeah. Well, how did it go? How was it received?
I think it's been really well received. I assume nobody was going to tell me otherwise, but I think the visuals have spoken volumes for the area and legitimacy of covering the place.
Yeah, well, we want to get more into detail on that. But yeah. Tina, coming back to you here, you know, I kind of thought that print was dying or in some cases dead, but apparently you don't think so.
Print is not dead, no. And there are numbers to back this up. Even looking at digital book sales, those have gone down in the past several years. But print is definitely not dead, especially in the indie publishing world. There are new titles coming up all the time. And even just within city and regional magazines, they have performed consistently well, even during economic downturn times. What we're doing isn't the traditional city or regional magazine. It's its own business model, but...
Well, I understand what you're saying about print, but it seems that everything else is going online or has a major online presence. You do not necessarily, although you are online.
Right. Yeah. We have our previews online, but we're a print-first publication. So it's been nice to have just a product that's beautiful that people can buy and own rather than something more ephemeral that is easier to forget.
Michaela, you are a writer and an editor, from what I understand. Mm-hmm. What drew you to this world?
You know, I think, well, largely, Tina and I have something in common. We both went to the Missouri School of Journalism, so I think that kind of helped us, you know, in terms of our love and our education.
And it gives you great credentials,
and
by
great
the way.
Credentials. Yes. That's true, too. Go Mizzou. But I think the other thing was I grew up in a community newspaper. My mother was the vice president of a small paper called the Lotawanna Express News in, you know, Blue Springs, Missouri, and I spent time with my kid sister in an old dark room. And I just remember the joy and the tactile love of putting together papers when there were still X-Acto knives and the blue grids and the rubber cement. So I think I was somewhat destined in a weird, fateful kind of way to be in print somehow, some way. And so I studied magazine journalism 16 years ago. That hurts to say. And I went a different path. I became a teacher. But in terms of writing, I love reporting and writing. I'm always going to do it. And so when I got reconnected with Tina from her, you know, she had a mentor that was my mentor many years ago. And she said, hey, you should talk to this person. And when she did, I said, oh, I really want to work with you. I'll do whatever you need. And she said, well, I'd like you to help first with doing some contributing editing. And so here I am. And it was an amazing experience. I got to work with a young journalist who's at the University of Oklahoma, Bryce McElhaney, and his ditch diggers to, you know, gold kind of folks. It was just about this great down-home Oklahoma story about his grandfather and great uncle. And how they basically, you know, turn dirt into gold.
From what I've seen so far, and I just have the one copy in front of me and have only had it for a couple of minutes, it's kind of a, Tina, kind of a down-home thing. It looks very, I don't want to say rural, but I guess rural kind of fits.
I would say deceptively down-home. Yeah, we certainly honor the rural lifestyle and community-driven type of stories, for sure. But I think if you read the articles, they're very sophisticated in their long-form style. And some of the ideas, while like I'm opening up to the 1,000-year plan for the lower Midwest, it's based in agrarian ideas and ideals, but it's very forward-thinking and progressive in how we might enact some more profit in a post-fossil fuel world.
Tell me how it is that you decided you want to focus on the lower Midwest and just pick this part of the country for your attention.
There are several regional magazines that are doing fantastically and that support the culture of their place. So I would say Oxford American and Bitter Southerner are doing great work in the American South. The American West has High Country News. Belt Magazine is doing great long-form journalism in the Rust Belt cities, St. Louis included, but not much beyond that. The Midwest doesn't have the same long literary tradition. It's been looked over in history, and I think that's a shame. And I think in looking over the whole area, we lose a lot in the national culture even. So I wanted to put a lens specifically on the lower Midwest because the Great Lakes has pretty good publishing world as well, but we don't have a lot here. And that was one of my frustrations as a freelance journalist, is that I want to tell stories about this place that are inherently important that may lose their meaning if put into a national focus.
You take some exception to the term flyover country, which is getting a lot of play these days for whatever reason, but a lot of people refer to this part of the country that way.
Mm-hmm.
You take exception to it because?
I would take exception to it because lots of people live here, even in our five focal states. It's 17 million, which is, you know, about the size of the L.A. area. But there are so many stories that are happening that are reflective of the country, that are reflective of just the human experience, that can be very beautiful. And I think because of our similar geography in terms of just the landscape, but also population history, our areas shaped by the Civil War and things like that, that has a very unique perspective that is worthy of investigation and celebration. And because it has been considered flyover state, kind of a blank slate, I think we have a very rich culture and a lot of influences that are coming from the outside that are fresh and being reinvented all the time here. And somebody needs to document that.
McKenna, what's your take on this flyover country reputation?
You know, I think it's interesting. You know, like a lot of – I'm born and raised in Missouri. I was born in Jefferson City. And as soon as I could get out of the state of Missouri, I did in my 20s because I couldn't wait to leave. And yet I decided to come home. And when I came home, I think one of the things I started thinking about, when you're a writer, you tend to start writing about home even when you're not there. And I think having these experiences elsewhere in the country and other places in the world really helped me kind of see that there is a huge culture that's here. And I think sometimes it's easy to buy the stereotypes or kind of the standard narrative that other people give you. And I think because we're sometimes misunderstood as kind of being really docile or, you know, Midwestern nice or super polite to the point of where it's kind of passive aggressive, that's not accurate. And so I think one of the things that I really strive to do in my writing and also in the work that I do as a journalist and a writer is to kind of dilate moments that put some of the things that we think about on its head. And so I think whenever I had an opportunity to document and help other people document a much more diverse, a much more nuanced, a much more complicated version of the Midwest, especially the lower Midwest, I jumped at it because I think we're misunderstood. And I don't know why that is. I think probably because, you know, a lot of times the awesome makers and creators that you see that get a lot of attention tend to be on the coasts. And I think they're fabulous and wonderful. But I think there's plenty of room for Midwestern makers and creators, too.
Tina, what kind of stories are you going to be focusing on to change people's attitudes?
I'll use the upcoming issue as an example.
Great. So the coming out in August, by the way?
In August, yeah. So it'll be issue 2. The theme is In Defense. And we have 4 awesome features that I'm very excited to run. One is about gentrification in Lincoln, Nebraska, and how one group has started to help do that gracefully in a you know, very poor neighborhoods just south of the state capital, but to show that those lives are vital and that they are legitimate. And I think that's something that we see in a lot of Midwestern cities right now. Now that the economy is turning around, cities are looking at revitalizing their areas, but we want to not forget people who have been living their lives there for a long time. So there's that. We have a short comic drawn by an artist named Natasha Alterici from the Tulsa area. And it's about Lozen. She's an Apache warrior who fought for her people, cared for her people. Beautiful Southwest colors. Kella's story about Midwestern road rage is really exciting. I hope she can tell you a little bit about that. And then we are working on some other features, more science-driven, about like species that are evolving even though their native prairies have been turned over to corn.
Well, you know, we've spoken about the rural nature of some of what you do. But, of course, within the states that we're talking about, there are some fairly significant urban populations as well. How are you going to be dealing with that and some of the issues that are present today? Or are you going to? Are you going to leave that to other people.
Important. No. I think it's so important to look at the cities and how they are influencing the rural areas. Obviously, a lot of our audience is going to come from people in the cities. And I think there's so much strength in diversity. And obviously, that's a place where you can find a lot of diversity, socioeconomic and otherwise. And so that's important to me, to tell those stories, stories of immigrants and people who often get overlooked, whether it's rural or urban, to help build that idea that Missouri is not just a bunch of like white farm boys. You know, there's a lot more to it than that.
How can we learn from the rural side of the picture here? I mean, the rural areas can learn from the cities. How about vice versa, McKenna?
You know, that's a great question. I was born and raised in small towns until I was 7. And I think one of the things that we can learn from one another is to create more intersectionality in our conversations together. I think sometimes we put ourselves in little places, like we're rural, we're urban, we're all these things. And I get that. But I think anytime you can have, whether it's a print publication like the New Territory, or, you know, just opportunities to meet and engage with each other more to have these conversations, I think that is really, really helpful. And I think one of the ways we can learn from that is by picking up magazines like this, reading it, having conversations over a cup of coffee. I don't think we're nearly as different as we need to be. And I think there's a lot of commonality and a lot of common ground. And I think this publication and what it's striving to do shows readers that.
When you say we're not as different as we need to be, I'm not quite sure I understand.
I think what I'm trying to say is, or not necessarily need to be, I think I probably misspoke there. I would say we're not as different as we maybe seem to be, that there's a lot of commonality in the experiences that we have. That, for instance, when I grew up, you know, in a really rural, small area, education issues, for instance, were, they definitely existed. And whenever I moved from the rural areas to suburban areas, for instance, of Missouri, I noticed that a lot of the same issues that I experienced in my school system were at the suburban level, were at the city level. And so I think sometimes we kind of, I think we can have a larger conversation about big issues, whether it's education or the environment or just what it means to be a Midwesterner. I think some of the regional pride that other regions have, and also the regional kind of introspection and reflection about what does it mean to be a Midwesterner? What is our legacy? What is our, what's our responsibility, especially in this time period, to be good to one another?
Tina, we do a lot on this program, a lot of discussion on legislatures and political activity. One of the things that keeps coming up here in Missouri is the rural-urban divide. And it is significant, particularly in the state legislature, the rural rules, because that's the majority of people. You've got to blend these two kind of thought processes together, do you not, in your magazine? How do you do that? Or is that something you've considered?
I can't speak too much to the political climate. We haven't delved into that yet, although I certainly would like to meet it head on at some point. Yeah. But I would say, in thinking about what Kella was talking about with fostering a sense of responsibility for the land or for the state or for the whole region, what literature and what literary journalism can do is tell stories of real people in a way that can also universalize that story that people can relate to. That's what art does, right? It puts you in that place. And so I'm hoping that that's our part of it, is to have a space to tell beautiful long-form stories that capture that sense of place. Because once you start to understand a place, then you can start to care for it. You start to identify it as your community and something that is important to you, rather than getting stuck in your small town mindset or stuck in your city neighborhood mindset. Expanding beyond that and making the whole Midwest part of your identity.
How difficult is it to start something like this?
It depends on your definition of difficult.
Give me your definition of difficult.
I think it's difficult in that I have a strong vision that I very much believe in, and being shown time and time again that other people are behind this, and it's a good idea. And from the editorial perspective, you know, I went to the University of Missouri School of Journalism. My capstone was in magazine publishing. And so on that end, it was a fairly straightforward process. There were some things, like real life things, that cropped up that I didn't have to do in class, but I had a framework for going forward with that. Figuring out a business model for publishing, as you said, in this digital age, is very challenging. And that's where I'm at right now, is making my case for finding investment or finding sponsors for the magazine, and just finding those people who share the ideals that can help fund this. But for the large part, our cover price is $15. And and that's very unique. It's a premium price because we're putting the onus of responsibility for the content on the readers themselves. So that's something that's bold that maybe people aren't quite used to, but I think as time goes on, it'll show.
That's $15 per copy.
Per copy.
Mm-hmm. That's right up there.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you know, one of the nice things about it and going through it is the fact that there are no advertisements.
Right.
However, that's how most publications make their money and can pay their staff.
Exactly. But this keeps us independent, especially because we're such a small operation. Just a handful of people are working on this right now. We can focus all of our resources on making it a beautiful magazine for the readers themselves, instead of having two client bases of advertisers and readers. We do have a few sponsors. They're contained within the center, though, so as not to distract from the rest of the stories. But yeah, it's a different kind of model.
How do you distribute? I mean, you're not going to find it in the local schnooks.
Right. Mostly we're relying on subscriptions and single copy sales online at newterritorymag.com. In St. Louis, I am working very actively on getting into some of the bookstores. I know we're in The Novel Neighbor right now. And then if you check our website, hopefully we'll have more up online. But we are distributing to a few small bookstores throughout the region as well.
What about managing a staff of over five states?
Uh-huh.
Michaela's easy because she's here.
She's easy enough, yeah, but we're still – this is the first time we've met in person.
Yeah, yeah.
So the internet is our friend. We use Slack a lot. It's an online communication tool.
We use it here.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Perfect. Yeah, and so that keeps everybody close together and knowing what's happening. But yeah, that's how we manage it online, and everybody else has other jobs. I've only pocketed a few dollars off of this project so far, so I have other things that I'm working on too. So we're sensitive to that. Unfortunately, it's a quarterly, so the metabolism's lower and we can manage it. But it's been fun. It's really inspiring to know that all these different pockets of the state have people who are dedicated to the magazine. Norman, Oklahoma, Lincoln, Nebraska, here in St. Louis, Mid-Missouri, and Fayetteville, Arkansas.
So you're working with people in some cases that you've never met.
Yeah, correct. Yes.
Kelly, you're shaking your head because you guys have just.
Yeah, I just met her. We've been communicating. I feel like I know her forever, but I have not physically met her until today. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Hasn't this digital age really made things easier, I guess is the best way to put it, in terms of being able to do what you do, Tina? I mean, this is something you couldn't have done maybe 15 years ago.
No, absolutely not. No, you'd need a central office, you'd need a staff, and then it would become a much more geographic, niche-specific operation. The internet has really opened up the possibility to do a wide multi-state publication and do it right.
Where did the ideas come from for stories?
Mostly the writers, yeah.
Are they freelance, by the way, primarily freelance?
Oh, yeah, freelance.
Yeah.
We are working on building a platform for people to realize their dream projects. That's kind of what I approached Kella with, was like, what do you want to be writing? Because I want it to be like a cultural platform. And it's a hard concept for some writers to get their heads around, because they want to research the magazine, know what the tone is, and then write up mm-hmm. to that. I say as long as it has some spirit of the lower Midwest in it and you are from here, you have a tie here, I'm willing to consider the idea. So that's why we have a short graphic novel and a lyrical essay and some more traditional long-form journalism.
Michaela, what's your dream assignment? What is it you really want to do?
Well, I mean, you know, anything I think that kind of explores why it is that, you know, in terms of human nature, why do we do certain things that seem incongruous with our values? And so, for instance, the one piece that I proposed that I'm working on right now and that we're editing in the moment is on road rage in the Midwest. I mean, I think, you know, again, we kind of have this stereotypical viewpoint of Midwesterners as incredibly kind and thoughtful. I mean, obviously the Coen brothers took that and played with that in Fargo. But I do see, you know, kind of this impatience that kind of pervades the way that we behave towards one another on the roads. And I live really close to the Galleria in Brentwood. And especially during the holiday season, you see some crazy things during that time period where you're like, what is going on? Like, it's the holiday time and you're treating people like just like jerks. And so it kind of got me to thinking, like, how do you reconcile Midwestern nice with road rage? And so I started kind of just exploring, writing inmates at the, you know, the Bonterre Eastern Correctional Facility, doing some reporting with, you know, the Missouri Department of Transportation, talking with the Missouri State Highway Patrol to find out why are we behaving this way? And also, you know, looking at neuroscientists and some of the research that's coming out of Duke University. And so this is kind of a mishmash of a lot of different probing kinds of wanting to find out, like, why are we doing this? And so that's my dream project right now, but I have many. I write creative nonfiction, fiction, and, you know, reportage. So it's really wherever my interests take me.
A large part of your book, of your magazine, are photographs, mm-hmm. and wonderful photographs, I might add. How do you balance that? Who are your photographers?
It's been a very organic process. Some personal connections. This cover photo is from a friend that I had at the University of Missouri, and he was kind enough to donate some of that. We also have some artwork, this issue by Brian Haynes. The next issue will be like by a Mexican-American artist in the Kansas, Topeka, Lawrence area. So it's been by serendipity so far of finding photographs. We're actively searching for photos to run in the second issue. We're looking for, especially this in this first section, standalone stories or photos that tell a story. And so we're always looking for more photographers. And we have submission guidelines online for that.
We will put a link to your website on our website so that folks who might be interested in doing that can find you and do that.
Yeah,
yeah, the wonderful photography. Give me a final thought, Tina, and then to you, Michaela. What do you want people to take away from this conversation about the new territory?
I want to say that just having roots in the land and the people here opens up a lot of possibilities for moving forward with that historical context and geographic context. I'm so excited to get the opportunity to explore that with people.
And Michaela?
I would say, you know, the new territory is what we make it. And so I really would invite, you know, anyone who's interested, not just to pick it up and read it, but who might be interested in contributing. There are so many amazing stories we all have to share. And I'd really like for us to redefine what makes up the lower Midwest and to really challenge some of those stereotypes that are out there.
All right. Well, it's the new territory. Volume 1, Edition 2 is coming out in August, so we'll look for that. And you can get more information about it on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Tina, Michaela, thank you so much. Good luck with this. This is a quite a project.
Thank you.
Thank you, Don.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU.